Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today is a Q&A episode. I regularly get a flood of emails over here, and I try to respond to everybody as best I can. As folks will know, I eventually get back to you. It may not be in the same day or in the next day. I try to prioritize, but it's getting a little bit challenging, especially because I try to be as thoughtful as possible, and the medium of writing an email back just takes me a long time. Maybe some people are really good at it, but I'm not one of them. And so I started responding by saying we will record a podcast episode for their questions. That way the response gets the time that it deserves. So today, Benny opens up three such emails, reads them out to me, and we go on a back and forth to try to answer the question or questions that were asked of us. They range the gamut, is reaching out, trying to get coaching advice from new coaches, trying to understand how to get on the best path, from parents actually who are coaches who want to know what to do with their kids. Of course, a great solution to these things is to go to 343coaching.com if you're a coach and signing up for the free or premium programs there. And if you're a parent, you go to 343masterclass.com to receive the compact and codification of our decades worth of experience. But nonetheless, sometimes the context is extremely important and another medium is warranted. So here we go, Q&A with Benny Rogers. I hope you enjoy.
Did you see Brian's game?
I was able to start watching, I think it was like the 55th minute, because I had office hours too. And then it just so happened I had a whole bunch of students come in. So yeah, from the 55th minute on,
was it still 1-0 at that time they were losing?
Yeah, it was 1-0. So I saw when I literally turned it on maybe a couple minutes later or something like that, they tied the game. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I watched the whole game.
Was the beginning of the game kind of the same as what it was like since I started watching it? Because since I started watching it, they for the most part controlled the ball, had possession.
Oh, yeah. They bossed the game for sure.
You know what's wild, Ben? I was like clicking through like the US Open Cup games to, you know, see the results and who did what or whatever. And I think it was a USL championship team. I forget what team it is already. There was this fool who scored. His last name was Akoff. And like, is that Dion Akoff? And I don't know if you know this guy, he used to play for Arsenal out in Riverside, and he would always play against our OSC Rage team. So Danny knows who this is, Choco, Prieto, all these guys. And like, is that guy still fucking playing soccer? And I fucking click. Yeah, there was that fool, fucking 33 years old and fucking just still going at it, man.
Damn, that's badass.
No, it makes me sad sometimes because I'm like, dude, if the other guys were still in shape or had kept the work, Choco could be playing USL, no problem. Prieto could be playing USL.
1,000%. They just started drinking too much.
For sure, for sure.
But what do you think? I mean, it's pretty... pretty badass that Brian will have the opportunity now to play against an MLS team. I mean, just the fact that they've made it this far in this tournament is pretty cool. That's why I like this tournament, because it gives, you know, lower level teams the opportunity to show what they have. And I'm just happy for Brian, dude. It's fucking badass.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. They're on a roll, aren't they? In the last four games or something, they've won every game, or they haven't lost or something like that.
They've every single home game that they've had so far, they won. So five home games, five wins.
Got it. No, that's pretty amazing for being a brand new team from nothing. So, yeah, and it was also quite impressive, you know, going against Orange County, who's been around the block for quite a long time and is whatever, quote unquote, a second division side, a pretty good second division side. And the bossing of the game was impressive. Yeah. Do you even know the stats? The possession stats? I'm sure it was above 60, right?
I'll look it up right now. But yeah, that's what I was going to say. Not even to just win the game, but to also boss the game.
Yeah.
It's pretty badass, dude. Let's see. You're going to laugh at this. EV Alta FC, 70% possession, 686 passes.
That's crazy. So 70-30 against Orange County?
70-30. There you go.
I bet you. Look, some guy's going to go up and look it up and say, no, you're wrong, Gary. I bet you that Orange County probably never in its history for a whole game had 30% possession only.
Probably, dude. Probably.
That's wild, man. The only thing that sucks, and it's the same issue that we tackled this problem in one of the episodes, two episodes or three episodes ago. The issue is always the same when you boss and boss and boss and boss and boss. Unless you have that one prolific killer up top that just will score guaranteed goals and will liquidate the game, you might lose some games. And that's fucking heartbreaking because you are actually in control. You are actually the better team. You are actually doing the better work as a technical staff, all of the above, right? And then you might not win a game. You know, you might draw it or you might actually lose it with the other team having 30% possession, because it's totally possible for Orange County to have had a late minute counterattack or corner or set piece and ball just fucking goes in and you lose the game and you boss the whole freaking thing by 70%.
Dude, I mean, Orange County's second goal came from a set piece. And dude, they had maybe, I don't know, five or six set pieces. And if it wasn't for like Orange County's shocking services, dude, you know, the game could have gone the other way. I mean, some of the services were horrible, dude. Like outside the box, right corner, outside of the 18, and just fucking launch it into the stands, dude. Shocking.
Yeah. We've never talked about this, but I think it is a real phenomenon that if you do great work as a technical staff, and what I mean by that is you play, quote unquote, the right way, right? It's not randomness on the field during match day. It's actually orchestrated, constructive buildup and attacks and things of this nature. When you do that, I think you're so much more emotionally invested in your team. And when you lose, it's that much more devastating. Versus the alternative where you don't do all this amazing work as a technical staff, as management, as coach, and you just basically kind of like pick 11 players and whatever happens on the weekend happens on the weekend. May the best roster win. When you lose, I'm sure coaches and everybody's devastated and they're hurt, you know, and they want to win, but I don't think it's as deep. It doesn't cut as deep as you having control, the plan, control of everything, Ben.
Oh, it's heartbreaking to invest so much and pour it in. And not only that, the heartbreak, but also the criticism that you received from like the media because you lost, like fucking Pep, right? His whole system dominated English football for 4 or 5 years. All of a sudden he has a streak of losing 10 games and this guy's the worst coach in the world now, you know?
Yeah. You can't escape it, man. I guess it comes with the territory. I just don't have the stomach for it, dude. Like Mourinho's an absolute genius. When's the last time Manchester United won anything or had any, even like chance of winning stuff? It's been forever. It's been since him, you know, and he has brought it up years in the past. Like, hey, you guys criticize me about my time at Manchester United. We won and we did this and we did that and we did the other thing. And what has happened since then? Nothing.
Right. Is it too early to tell, Gary? Do you think now with Brian's, you know, little success that he's had at this club, do you think he'll start to get the recognition that he deserves? Because I feel like even if he goes on, they play an MLS team next, they win, the narrative's going to be, oh, well, the MLS team doesn't care about this tournament. They're playing their slaps, you know. Or do you think people will finally start to recognize? I mean, even just looking at that stat, Gary, 70% possession, and you're playing a team that's supposedly in a higher tier than you. I mean, that's got to make fucking waves, you would think.
Things. Number one, I think people already know, right? They know. People know. They just don't want to say it. Number one. Number two, I think it's still too early. What is it? There's 7 games in from launching the franchise. So it's too early. You know, you need, unfortunately and correctly, you need to develop consistency. So does it look the same, you know, 15 games in? Does it look the same 20 games in? Does it look the same at the end of the season, 30 games in? And people like results, right? They like the table. So where do you land at the end of the season on the table? So because you can do 70% possession your entire season and then maybe you barely made the playoffs, or maybe you make the playoffs and you're eliminated in the first game of the playoffs and nobody remembers you. You see what I'm saying? Like, you kind of have to go all the way to the end. You have to kind of make the final, you know, the championship final or something. And if you lose the championship final, I mean, I think the haters are going to hate and the people who've been supportive are going to support, because you can always craft that narrative too. It's a brand new franchise. Like, the expectations for a brand new franchise are always super low because, Jesus Christ, you're starting from zero, right? How the heck can you possibly build an entire identity, an entire culture, make it all coalesce so that you can win titles? That's fucking insane. You know, nobody can expect that. I mean, just making the playoffs is a pretty good accomplishment. And if you make the playoffs in style, like how we just decided, I think it's a pretty good. The haters are going to hate, Ben. I mean, you know, this is true. And the MLS people or quote unquote journalists or reporters, they probably won't even give it attention.
Right. They mean us up that Brian made the, in overtime.
Oh yeah.
And think about how much bad luck or bad misfortune that Brian has had with PKs in his history, dude.
I thought about that too. It was like, test it.
Yeah, no, maybe it was a blessing that he wasn't on the sideline, dude, watching from the owner's box or something. I don't know, dude. His team seems to have been cursed in PKs.
That's true, man. That's true. All throughout youth and everything, man. I think the curse was broken when Argentina beat France, dude, because when they were going to PKs, dude, and I was in the garage isolated just watching the game, because you know how I like to watch important games. Like, leave me alone. I don't want to be around anybody. We went to PKs and like, fucking Christ, here we go. I felt like Mexico. You know, Mexico has that curse.
You started tearing up or what?
No, when they won, I got teary-eyed for sure. It's really, the whole Argentina thing is weird, man, because for the longest time, folks around the world didn't really root for Argentina, really didn't want Argentina. But this time, I think it was Messi, right? I think they wanted to see Messi have career justice and win it all and stuff like that. And they were supportive. But for the most part, people want Argentina to lose.
Yeah, for sure. Last thing about the game, right? I mentioned Brian obviously wasn't on the sidelines, red card in the last game. How many texts do you think this will send to his assistant coach during the game with adjustments, or at halftime, do you think is he allowed to be in the locker room, or I don't know? But
no clue. No,
it must be. It must be kind of different to see the game though from like a higher perspective and versus being on the sidelines. But I think when you're on the sideline, you get more of that emotional feel of the game, and you kind of can feel better the subs that need to be made. But I'm sure this guy sent like 1,000 messages to his staff during the game.
Yeah. Oh, well, all I can say is from my own experience, right? When he would get red carded at youth games and I'm filling in, you know, the phone's blowing up for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, what's funny now, Gary, is if that were to happen now and you were coaching, I don't know, were you carded back then? Like, did you have your coaching license?
No cards, nothing, zero. Nothing,
right. So nowadays, dude, that's a big no-no, dude. You have to have like a carded manager or carded assistant coach. If not, forfeit the game. It's over, dude.
Of course. Well, I would just roll up pretending to be Brian. And you know I could pull that off. I just put on the hat or whatever and I'm good to go.
You just put on the Yankees hat.
Good times.
That's funny, dude. All right. Let's get into it, Gary. I know you sent me maybe a span of 3 or 4 emails in the past week. I have some members reaching out with some questions. I have 3 of them here. I think 3 is going to be more than enough because there's plenty that we can dissect from and discuss within these emails. Obviously, we'll keep their names anonymous. But this first one says, I'm reaching out as a new coach and a new member of the 343 Coaching Premium class. I was introduced to the podcast by my mentor, and I was encouraged by your podcast and discussions about the game of soccer. While listening how you can help instill core methodology within 6 months to a year for those that are eager to learn as much about the game of soccer with the potential of becoming a successful coach. I have been incorporating your podcasts from each module to build my framework. I wanted to kindly ask if the premium coaching program is currently being updated or if it is mainly used as a rich archive. It shows that there is access to online coaching clinics with 8 modules. I just want to know if this is the best pathway for me or if the player masterclass would be better. For context, I have 3 daughters, 2 I coach U6 and another in U10 that is in club that I'm an assistant coach and helping with practice sessions. I'm asking for input because I'm trying to get the most benefits while developing my coaching pathway. I'm not sure if I could be provided access, a 1 to 3 day trial for the player's masterclass to ask if the other program is more beneficial. And lastly, he says, I graduated from college with a degree in exercise sports science, but I never played soccer. Now I am a senior systems engineer in IT, which is quite different from sports. However, I have always enjoyed soccer. As my daughter's love for the game has grown, so has my own appreciation for it. Any insight or direction provided would be greatly appreciated. So, Gary, why don't we start with his first question that he brings up, where he says, I wanted to kindly ask if the premium coaching program is currently being updated, or is it mainly used as a rich archive?
Yeah, so it's updated at the tail end, Benny. And what I mean by that is the program is rolled out in phases. So there's phase one, which is year one material. There's phase two, which is year two material, so on and so forth. And we're up to, you know, after phase five, you know, we just basically said, hey, after this, it's lifelong learning. And that's literally what we named it. So folks who have stuck with us for over 5 years, and we have like a lot of coaches still in the program who are like on their eighth year, 10th year. So, I mean, we launched this thing in 2014, so it's been quite a while. They get those updates at the tail end. So any new thing that we develop, like say the master class, well, guess what? Those 5+ year members have free access to the master class. When we rolled out the 7 versus 7 program, which we did in conjunction with John Kokoris, when was it, a year ago or a year and a half ago or something like that? Guess what? The 5+ year members get all that new stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So things get updated on the tail end. But aside from minor edits and cleanups for the core year one, year two, year three, the methodology is the methodology. It's kind of like, I know it's not the same, so don't jump on me for this, but it's kind of like physics. I mean, I always think about physics because I teach physics, I study physics, I got my degrees in physics and mathematics. The fundamentals are the fundamentals, right? And so physics textbooks don't really change. You know, you always start off with the basics, motion, you know, the equations of motion. And then you study projectiles, and then you study forces, and then you get introduced to something called energy, and then you get introduced to momentum. Like, that is standard fundamental stuff. And you don't go in there and update it with, I don't know, rotating black holes, you know, for 101. Like, that, it doesn't work that way. So the basics are the basics, and then you layer complexity on top of the basics, which is what phase two and phase three and phase four, so on and so forth, do. Now, some folks might say, well, you know what, Gary, like, you could introduce like scouting, how to scout players or scout your opposition in the first year of the course. Yeah, you could throw that in there because there's fundamentals and basics involved in scouting as well, or basics and fundamentals involved in other aspects of the game as well. But that is a, in my opinion, in our philosophy, that is a distraction for coaches who are particularly just starting out, like this gentleman. You don't go in there and start wasting time and studying how to scout opposition or scout. No, focus on your own team. Focus on your own training sessions. Focus on the fundamentals of the activities that are should be taught, you know, in your first year or in your second year of training. So that is really the answer regarding the updating of the program.
What about his thoughts on, because he has three daughters, Gary, or three kids, and he coaches all three of them, or assistant coach. Is it better for him to purchase the coaching education, or would it make more sense for him to focus on the player development masterclass?
Yeah, so let's see. If he's an assistant coach, then you don't really make all the decisions, right? The head coach is the one saying, we're going to train the team this way or that way. So I don't know how much influence he has there. If he has a lot of influence and it's more like a co-coaching sort of stuff, I think the coaching course is critically important at that point. With respect to very young kids, I think 8 years old, you said, I think the coaching course is incredibly beneficial to parents themselves also, because it starts developing your eye for what is good coaching versus what is not good coaching. And that, you know, you need to have that level of discernment, and what is good football versus not good football. So the coaching course gives you that. And then the masterclass comes at kind of like the same thing, but from a very different angle. Instead of team training activities being focused there, it's more individual focused activities that are focused in the masterclass. Like, hey, what can you have your kid do against the wall? What is a disguised pass? What is a daisy cutter pass? What is a good building out of the back look like? What, you know, what is a winger player attributes? You know, what makes a good winger? What makes a good center back? So it's very individual focus. And would this gentleman benefit from that as well as a parent? I mean, that's what I developed it for, is for parents. So sure, the long story short, I'm not trying to be salesy here. As everybody in the audience knows, I do a total injustice to our programs by not marketing harder, like on X or on Twitter or on Instagram. You don't see me ever coming out saying, buy the program. Never, not once, Benny. So, but in this occasion, I would say both programs are a good fit for this guy. Insofar as 1 to 3 day trials, I'm just not going to do that. It adds more complexity. You know, I have to, it's just no. Are you in or are you out? And that's kind of why we keep the programs, in my opinion, quite affordable too.
100% great. If I can throw my 2 cents in, I think one, I'm sure this guy has already done it, but if he hasn't, sign up for the free coaching membership that you offer through the 343 platform. And two, like you said, Gary, this guy's the assistant coach. He has 3 kids that are on the younger side. I think personally, the masterclass might be better suited for him. And I say that because even within the masterclass, Gary, there's examples of the tactic. Like, it's not as complex, obviously, but there are examples of the tactical lessons. For example, building out of the back, rondos, losing your man. And those are mainly some of the core principles that are within phase 1 of the, you know, coaching education. So maybe he tries that out for a year. And as they get a little bit older, I don't know if this guy's going to become the head coach or something. I think at that point he can, you know, shift over to the coaching education side, because I think you know, especially with 3 kids, and the cool thing about that is that, you know, they can train together. They can go to the wall together. They can work on daisy cutting passes together, and it can be, you know, a cool experience for all 3 of them. So, I mean, that's what I think.
That's fair. That's fair. I'm also just leaning on messages that I've gotten over the years from dad coaches. And they've told me many a times that just going through the coaching program itself, you know, gave them the capabilities to guide and mentor their individual kids too. But yeah, I agree with
you. Yeah. He also replied, Gary, where is it? Thank you for your response, Gary. I think it would be great to discuss this further on the podcast. And he goes on to say, on a side note, I want you to know the insights I've gained during the few months of the first year program have been invaluable. And my motto since joining has been all in. I've been applying the foundational concepts while also taking the initiative to read books on rondos and soccer philosophy, watch films of high caliber youth teams, and watch professional soccer. I took the online U.S. coaching grassroots class and received my grassroots license, but I had issues with the depth of knowledge provided. It was very superficial, and when I reached out for further advice, I received crickets. Also, since I lack playing experience, my question comes from an academic perspective, but I also trust my instincts and common sense. Just because a book suggests a specific approach doesn't mean it's the ultimate solution. Adapting to what we observe on the pitch is crucial. If you have any other recommendations or advice to help me on this coaching journey, I would greatly appreciate any insights you can share. Thank you once again, and also to Benny, because I genuinely enjoy the raw authenticity of the podcast where you all share your opinions transparently. Have a great day, Gary.
No, that's cool. It's cool when you get messages like this, man. It's really energizing. Recommendations, man, it's good that he's digging in and doing a whole bunch of research and reading books and watching pro games and trying to tap as many resources as possible. I guess the only thing I would add there is just maybe a word of caution, because I've seen it so many times, Ben, where especially new coaches, they end up getting shiny new object syndrome, where it's like, oh, I just came across this thing in this book or this new activity that this coach from Nebraska who has, you know, 10,000 X subscribers or 30,000 YouTube subscribers is saying is amazing. And it makes sense to me. So I'm going to go ahead and do that with my teams also. That, in my opinion, is a path to mediocrity, a path to disaster, a path to non-development. If you're spreading yourself thin and experimenting and want to do something new. And again, not to toot our own horn or whatever, but if you look at what Brian's been able to accomplish and what this program, you know, has done for so many other coaches, just stick to the program is what I would say, and really master the program as much as you can. And then again, in my opinion, you develop a little bit of an armor, a little bit of an immunity, a little bit of an eye for discerning the information that's out there online or otherwise, insofar as who knows what they're talking about and who's a charlatan. Because there's a lot of charlatans, there's a lot of snake oil, there's a lot of absolute nonsense that will misguide you.
I've seen people on X call you a snake oil salesman, Gary.
That's funny. I never sell anything on X. It's ridiculous.
It's hilarious, dude. No, man, I think this guy's on the right track for sure, especially if he's digging in and doing this research as to, you know, what is good. Because like you said, there's a lot of fluff out there. And I think especially for new coaches, it can be easy to just go through your, you know, U.S. soccer coaching license, and that's the only education that you ever receive. And then you kind of just rely on, I don't know, drills that maybe your coach did back in the day. Or like you said, you see a new Instagram post of a Man City attacking session, and okay, there you go. That's the one I'm running with. So the fact that he's, you know, out here researching, trying to implement our methodology, and I think he's on the right track for sure.
Yeah, and he'll appreciate this. He's an engineer, so he can appreciate how difficult it is to get this signal from the noise, right? Most everything out there is noise. Where do you find the signal and how do you find the signal? And many a times it's just a function of background and experience to be able to identify the signal from the noise. And unfortunately, I've seen it time and time again. Coaches think the noise is the signal and off they go. I'll leave it there.
No, for sure.
Let's keep it positive.
Yeah, for sure. It's also a lifelong journey, Gary. I mean, it doesn't stop after you complete the 343 the course, or after you've gotten this certain license. I mean, even the best coaches in the world, I feel that they're probably still learning, still trying to find other sources or invent new activities. I think the journey never ends to becoming a good coach. So it doesn't stop after you've graduated this course or you have this license now. It's like, it's a lifelong thing, man. You got to keep building at it, keep working on it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And especially when the context is continually changing on you, because one day or one season you're coaching U9s and it's your kids. And next thing you know, you're doing U15s or U18s, and it's you're doing males or females now. And that context alone forces you to kind of adapt and adjust certain things.
This is kind of random, Gary, but do you know how they do it overseas? Is it like the same as us, with meaning 7v7 to 9v9 to 11v11? Or do they start?
I don't know, Benny. I don't know.
I'll have to do some research, and I'm just curious as to how they do it in the rest of the world.
They do small-sided for a longer period of time.
Right. Yeah,
but I don't know at what ages, it's for how long, all that stuff. Like, you know, Ben, 5, 6, 7 years ago, I moved away from the youth game already. So yeah, it's not like I'm there taking a look. Oh, what is Spain doing now? Or what is Italy doing? No clue.
Right. Anyways, I'll do some research on that. We'll have an episode on that one day.
Okay.
Email number 2. Hope you're doing well, Gary. I'd love to get your thoughts on an idea I've been wrestling with for my U8 boys team. I've coached this group for 4 seasons now, after years with the U11 girls team, and I'm considering shifting to a select model. My goal is to focus on the kids who genuinely love the game and want to improve, not just the ones whose parents are signing them up out of habit. To test the waters, I've started splitting the team into 2 groups during training and games. The focus players and the daisy pickers. You know the type. Back to the game, watching clouds, fully checked out. The difference in engagement is night and day, and mixing them just frustrates the kids who are there to play. We've been running separate 5v5 games instead of blending for fairness, and it's helped. The focus players get sharper sessions, and the daisy pickers actually get more touches instead of hiding behind stronger teammates. But as we move to 7v7 next season, I want to commit to the 3-4-3 methodology, and I'm not sure the whole group is ready for that intensity. There are rec options for the boys who aren't selected, so no one's getting cut from soccer entirely. My hangup? Navigating parent reactions. Have you dealt with this before? Is U9 too early to make the call, or is it better to invest in the kids who are all in? appreciate any war stories or wisdom you've got. Thanks, guys.
So much. This a whole episode unto itself. First gut reaction is you're thinking about the right things, and just be careful not to have a parent coup, you know, and have parents, you know, overthrow you, and whatever organization it is that you fall under, that they don't remove you as the coach, right? Especially if you want to keep coaching. So you have to tread a little bit carefully there. We have plenty of war stories along those lines, Benny, as I'm sure you're aware of. That whole email reminds me of three articles that I wrote a while back. So maybe you can just screenshot the articles themselves so people can see, and then, or we'll link it also down below. But one article, I wrote it or titled it that we have to differentiate between rec and pro player development. So there's two branches. And here in American soccer, historically and still to this day, almost all of youth soccer is treated with a recreational mentality, with a recreational culture, which means it's very soft. It's unserious. It caters to the daisy pickers, as he puts it. It does not cater to the high end. And you as a coach have to kind of make a decision, in my opinion. Are you going to pursue the serious route? Or are you going to pursue the soft, it's all just a game anyway, the kids are getting fresh air, you know, which one of the two paths are you going to go down? We chose the pro player development pathway. And that doesn't mean that you have to have players that are professional player potential at all. It just means that your posture towards soccer and team training and everything is of the professional mindset. So you could be a recreational program or a mid to low tier select club travel program and have the professional playing mindset. The other article that I wrote that this reminds me of, and I would encourage this person to go, actually, it's not an article, it's podcasting, go listen to, is my chat with Kirk Kinsey. So Kirk Kinsey, if I'm not mistaken, is out there in Arizona. Sorry, Kirk, if I got that messed up. Rec program, or at least started as a rec program as well. And he took the pro player mindset to it all. And he's had amazing success within the rec environment doing that. So he is a great resource, in my opinion, as to how to handle the parents in that situation. So I would encourage to listen to that episode. And then the other article that it reminded me of was one that I wrote on who should you cater to within your roster. So, because there's a bell curve. There's the high end, there's the low end, and then there's everybody else. So should you have your activities and training and culture catered to towards the middle, towards the bottom, or towards the top? And I make the argument of catering it towards the top. Why? Because the top then does not get screwed. You're doing well by the best players. And then the middle is also not getting screwed. In fact, they're getting pushed to be better than they currently are, right? So that helps their development. And then the bottom end of the roster, okay, you could potentially say that they're getting quote unquote screwed, but maybe this is not the program for them anyway, in which case they find a program that is better suited for them. So at the end of the day, you are doing best by them as well. Versus if you take a different approach, say if you cater towards the middle or towards the back end, you're screwing more than just one group. So I don't know, Benny, that's a long-winded non-answer to the whole thing, but I would encourage this person to try to do the pro player pathway and not be recreational, and hope and tread carefully so that parents don't overthrow you.
Is U9 too early to make the call, Gary?
Maybe it might be too early. Yeah, because generally I say for the most part, just make the kids have a good time, obviously, at U8. I think you can never go wrong with having that posture. I think it maybe takes a quote-unquote special, a more experienced maybe coach or technical staff to deploy a more serious thing at U8. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe you have a different opinion, Benny.
Well, one, I feel for this guy because...
Yeah.
You know me, Gary. Me personally, like, I'm a non-confrontational guy. And so, yeah, like, I hate dealing with dilemmas with parents or making parents upset. And it seems like this guy's biggest holdup is navigating the parent reaction. I would say I've had this same exact experience happen to me in the past where, you know, the season ends, there's a core of six or seven kids that are bought in, always showing up on time. They want to be there. And then the remaining kids, like he said, it's just the parents are dragging them to practice and they do kind of slow down the sessions. And I'm like, Gary, I'm not kidding. I would like dread making these phone calls to the parents at the end of the season saying, hey, you know, your son or your daughter, she's a great kid, great human being, but just not at the level that we're looking for. And 99% of the time, Gary, the parents are understanding. And also they kind of know already, like, yeah, I know, little Susie, you know, I just want her to have fun. The good thing about this guy's situation, like you said, that there's a rec option. So it's not like any of the kids are getting cut, you know? And I think if he wants to be competitive and he's going to, or if they're in a club environment, then yeah, I would say cut the cord and have those difficult conversations. I think one-on-one is obviously better than a whole group meeting and saying, hey, these are the players that are coming. I think if you can have that good rapport with the parents, it makes the conversation a little bit easier. I'm sure you guys have instances like this, Gary, but recently there was another coach in our club who it came time to separate the teams into like a top team and a lower team. And maybe two parents, Gary, were just like absolutely outraged. What are you doing? You don't know what you're talking about. You have no idea. How can you separate the friend groups? This is going to hurt my child's confidence. I'm going to get lawyers involved. And Gary, that was the initial conversation. And now 3 weeks later, their kids are on the other team and the kids are having fun, dude. It's, you know what I mean? And I think personally, those kids getting grouped together, it's better for them because one, they're going to get more playing time. They're going to get more touches on the ball. They're going to have more fun with each other. And then the kids that are serious and focused and committed, they're going to be able to compete. And it seems like this coach is able to run a good session with them and they're going to listen and absorb the information that he's trying to teach. So I think if you can not necessarily cut the cord, but you make this change, I think it'll be beneficial for everybody. But like I said, I feel for this guy. I'm sure he's dreading these parent conversations coming up just like I do. And that's why he's reaching out to you for advice. But, you know, I would say just bite the bullet and do it, man.
No, and Benny, beautifully put, man. You obviously have a lot more experience with these sorts of situations than I do, especially at those age levels too. Because I've been on the record a long time, right? That the little ones, I've never been involved with the little ones, and I don't ever want to be involved with the little ones. And I don't even get along with the little ones. So I think he should listen to you and not to me. But, you know, if he wants to read those articles or listen to Kirk Kinsey as well, the podcast episode, I would advise that he do that too.
Yeah. And I think, like, again, I'll reemphasize the fact that he's saying that there's a rec option for the players that he doesn't select.
Yeah.
Because in the situations that I've dealt with, it was, hey, you're not good enough to be on this team. Good luck. You know, like, sadly, you know, obviously I would try and connect them with other coaches in the area or send them somewhere. But it's not like we had a rec team that I could just say, hey, you're going to be on this team, you know? So in this situation, the fact that it's, hey, you still have a place to play. And the other thing too, Gary, is if the kid is going to be sent to recreation, my sales pitch to the parent is, hey, you know, show up, have fun. It's going to be a lot less expensive for you and your son. The kid is 7 years old. You know, do you want to be paying $2,000 or do you want to pay $500? Your kid's going to have the time of his life, pizza party after every game, you know?
Trophies at the end of the season.
Yeah. No matter what place we get, we're getting a trophy, Gary. And seriously, the money that I always use that as like a big sales pitch. Like, look, like your kid's still so young. Let him play on a recreation team. You pay $400. That includes a uniform, everything. Your kid's not going to know the difference. He's 7 years old. He just knows that he's showing up to the games on the weekend, you know? Brilliant. He can still pick daisies in the middle of the game, dude. I don't know.
Brilliant, man. Brilliant. No, I want to hear back from this coach. I want to hear what ends up happening.
1,000%, dude. All right. I think we sufficiently answered his question. All right. Last one, Gary. Gary, I hope you're doing well. Everybody hopes you're doing well, man. got a lot of fans out there.
It's very standard, because then I'm like, I'm doing great. I hope you are too.
What if you were just honest, like, fuck, I'm not, I'm fucking stressed. I have all this shit. It reminds me of this movie I forget who it is. It's called The Invention of Lying. And like, they live in a world where like, you can't, like, lying doesn't exist. So like, they're like, hey, good morning, how are you? The guy's like, my life fucking sucks. Like, fucking brilliant.
I have to watch that. It's called The Invention of Lying.
Yeah, dude, it's with, oh my gosh, this guy's a legend. Ricky Gervais, dude.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. I never even heard of this.
Fucking brilliant movie. And then all of a sudden, like, this fool just, I forget why, but he's like, what if I just like told a lie? And like, so, no, seriously, dude, because like, he goes on a first date and like with some chick, like at the beginning of the movie, and he's like, oh, like, how's it going? And she's like, honestly, like, you fucking suck. Like, you're ugly as fuck. For the waiters, like, whoa, I hate my job. What do you guys want? You know? But then, you have to, dude. And then one day he's like, yeah, what if I say something that wasn't true? And then he just starts fucking telling all these lies and everybody like believes him.
That's hilarious, dude. Okay, I gotta watch this thing, dude. I'll report back.
No, but think about it, dude. How I know we're going off on a fucking rabbit hole here, but how many times do like people ask you, like, you know, how are you? Or like, and dude, how many times a day do you think the average human lies to somebody?
Bro, what a weird question. I've never even thought about that.
Yeah, think about it, dude.
I think it's not zero.
Yeah, it's not zero. I'll have to do like some more research. I've heard it's like over 10, dude.
Yeah, because and then it depends on like how you categorizing it. So for instance, like, are you hungry or something, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're with your girl or something like that, and like, hey, baby, you hungry? You want to get something to eat? And maybe they're like, no, I'm not hungry, but that's a lie. Like, you're hungry.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean? Sure. I don't know.
There's so many things, dude. Or a student comes up to you and says like, hey, Gary, like, is there any way that I'm going to pass this class? And you know the answer is fucking no, but you're like, oh, maybe, you know, just fucking study for the next one. Or, but you know absolutely for certain, like, this person has no idea. There's no chance they're going to.
Well, I'm pretty direct, but yeah, I know what you mean. I think that the same posture I have in soccer, I take at school, Benny. Like, I'm fucking straight, pro mindset, not ref.
Well, even in soccer, dude, we've mentioned this on the podcast before. Like, if a parent comes up to you and says, you know, how's my kid doing? You're not going to say your kid fucking sucks. He's shocking. There's no chance that he's ever going to go pro or even play in college. You don't say that. You say, yeah, he's doing good, but he still has a lot to work on. But he has so much potential, Gary. Right? Am I wrong?
Oh, my God. No, that's how it is, dude. That's how the world works, unfortunately, man. It's always, and it's especially the politicians, in my opinion, right? They, or the media, even worse, right? The media is like, they'll just take some fact and contort it so hardcore that they're basically lying. They're essentially lying. But if you call it out, they're like, this is just a fact. Like, look it up. It's a fact. You know, the narrative lies.
Dude, I was cracking up. You saw Trump's like physical got released or whatever. It was like, everything's all good. Like, ear, everything's fine, except for one scar related to gunshot wound. I was fucking laughing, dude.
I didn't read it. Obviously, I just see all the chaos that ensues with anything surrounding that guy. And people saying some crazy stuff like, oh, you would think this is the report of a UFC fighter, you know, 6'3", 240, 30 pounds or whatever, pure muscle.
Shocking. This guy was like, one of the physicians said this is the best physical report that he's ever seen. You couldn't believe it. Anyways. Good. All right, Gary. I hope you're doing well. I recently discovered your channel and have been loving going through your podcast and hearing what you and guests have to say about tactics, youth soccer coaching, and soccer in the States as a whole. I believe I'm enjoying your content even more than usual as it hits close to home for me. I grew up playing academy soccer in Southern California and was in or around the same bubble as Brian. I'm assuming he's your brother, but please correct me if I'm wrong. By the way, somebody commented the other day, who's Brian? Anyways, I started out playing for Chivas USA when Teddy Chronopoulos, I probably pronounced that wrong, was running the program. After he was fired, I made the move to LA Galaxy, where I played for Alex Yee, Mauricio Cienfuegos, and Todd Saldana, to name a few of the coaches I had the opportunity to play for. I did a few years with Arsenal Academy before finishing up my career at playing college soccer at Rio Hondo. As I progressed through my career, I always remembered playing against Brian's teams. So I'm finding it very interesting to see the perspective of others in the situations that I was also in. The reason I am reaching out to you today is because for a couple of years now, I've had a passion for coaching since I finished playing, and I want to pursue this as a serious career. I'm currently working through my licenses with US Soccer. He's a D license holder, and plan to continue working through as far as I can work my way up. I'm also working with a very small club out of Almonte, where I have my own team. My question for you is, what advice do you have for someone in my shoes and with my aspirations to continue to not only progress forward in my journey as a coach, but also continue to learn? I have asked this question several times to several people, and I'm eager to get advice from as many sources as I can. As far as US soccer goes, I've gotten answers along the lines of, it's good for me to network and meet people higher up who can provide opportunities, as well as other coaches in my shoes. On the other side of things, when it comes to learning, I've been recommended to learn the teaching / coaching methodologies of others from around the world. I would love to hear your take on these things. Any advice or comments are greatly appreciated. I hope to hear from you soon. So kind of along the same lines, Gary, of the last guy, this guy has aspirations to continue coaching and wants to coach at a high level. So what is your advice for him?
Again, I've written over 400 articles. I've written, developed his entire curriculum. I've done 300 podcasts. I've built a bit, like, all this stuff to answer this guy's question, right? Literally. So it's tough. I'll tell you what comes to mind. I think really emphasizing on repetition is crucial. And I mean repetition for you, the coach, the guy who wants to get really good at the craft or a craft. Repetition is key. Don't spread yourself thin. Don't try to do a whole bunch of different types of things. Even though in the beginning, since you don't know what is right, what is wrong when it comes to training or anything at all, I understand the strategy. The instinct is to sample a whole bunch of different things to hopefully identify what works and what doesn't work. I get it. And maybe everybody has to go through that in the beginning. But just be aware that if you don't bunker down with, say, a set of core training activities, let's say it's a dozen or 10, and repeat those forever, right? For years, you will never get good at this thing. Okay. So what activities? I think you need to identify and get a hold of the foundational, the building blocks of football, the stuff that never changes since the game was invented till now. Okay. Those are the activities that should be used. And those are the ones that you should repeat forever. Like this documentary called Jiro Dreams of Sushi. So the very famous sushi guy in Japan, has his kid, who's going to inherit the sushi empire, and has his kid, work at the restaurant, and all his kid does for like 20 years, I don't even know, I'm not exaggerating too much, is he has to make the rice and nothing else. He doesn't even get to touch a single piece of fish ever for like 10 years or 20 years. All you're doing is mastering how to make the rice. And after you get to a certain level of excellence, which is like the top 0.01% in the world and make you rice, okay, you can touch a piece of salmon. You know what I mean? Like, I think this is so crucial. And we've developed the program precisely for that, because we had to go through all the trial and error for the most part, right? Luckily, Brian is very talented. And luckily, Brian, since he was 3 years of age, and myself as well, we studied football religiously, so when it came time to be coaches, you have this entire culture behind you and this knowledge base behind you. And then you can, that's done. That's complete almost. You see what I'm saying? Versus somebody who's never played soccer in their life before, they're starting from zero. I don't even know how these people do it, honestly. So that's what came to my mind, Benny, is the criticality of repeating something forever. And please pick a possession-based methodology. because that also is what, in my opinion, gives you the most joy to having a team, is to see your team actually having possession versus some random kickball stuff is not as joyful. So, and if you get joy as a coach, you want to keep doing it. So Ben, I don't know, those two thoughts came to mind.
Yeah. I think easier said than done. When you mentioned this idea of the documentary Jiro Dreams of Sushi, I think if somebody were to hear that they're going to have to cook rice for 10 years, especially this generation, Gary, you're only cooking rice for 10 years. You're not touching the fish. Dude, I'm serious. Like kids these days, or even adults these days, are like, fuck that. I'm going to go find somebody else to work with. And guess what, Gary, maybe they go to somebody else. They learn how to cook rice for a week or two, and then they learn the other stuff about the fish. And can they do it? Yeah, they're doing it, but what's their product? It's fucking mediocre. It's not going to be the quality that you're going to see from the guy that actually spent 10 years learning how to make rice before he touched the fish, you know? But a lot of people these days, Gary, they don't have that mindset. And like the generation now, they want fucking immediate results, or they want to move on to the greatest thing. And so as a coach, imagine you told the coach, Gary, hey, you're only fucking working on 4v1 rondos for 10 years. And only seriously, dude, the coach is going to be like, what the fuck, Gary? Like, no, I just saw Bielsa drill on YouTube. I can easily run that with my team. And can they run it? Maybe, but they're not going to even have like a little idea of the complexities behind it and the reasons for the movements. And so, like you said, Gary, you have to put in time, you have to do the work, but it's easier said than done because so many people these days, they just want instant gratification, and it's hard, man. It's hard to stick to something for a long period of time.
Yeah. Be patient with yourself. Unfortunately, in reality, there are no shortcuts, really. So you want to go do the Bielsa drill and all that stuff? Great. Go do it. And eventually, it's going to take you even longer, but eventually you might end up converging to what I'm saying anyway. It'll just take all this experimentation on your side. Try the Bielsa drill, watch how your 12-year-old can't do it at all, and watch how you feel completely incompetent as a coach because you picked a drill that is way beyond the capabilities of your players, and it's the whole thing is shocking and a disaster. And then you can go ahead and do the same thing when you find the Borussia Dortmund drill, or you find some dude on the internet saying, oh my God, this drill is amazing, I'm a great coach. And then you can try their stuff too, and everything falls to pieces and parts. And next thing you know, those 10 years have gone by, Benny, anyway, right? And eventually you're like, okay, I'm going to settle down and, you know, work on fundamentals. And then they find their path, Ben. But it's going to take you 10 years, no matter what. The whole point of our program, I hate to keep talking about a program, but we're trying to offer some sort of shortcut, but it's just, you have to have faith that we actually know what we're talking about. And, you know, we try to talk about our track record as well, Benny, so that you don't have to have as much faith, but we went through all the trial and error and we're giving you the solution. Ben, these questions are so tough. I hate doing Q&A, dude. I hate it because it's all context dependent, and I don't want to demoralize folks or anything, but this is just reality. If I want to learn how to make this freaking pen, it's going to take 10 fucking years to know what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah. Look, 10 years, it seems like such a long period of time, Gary. I think I remember you told me this probably like at Biggs at one of our first ever meetings. It's like 10 years seems like such a long time, but I mean, I started coaching 10 years ago and it seems like just fucking yesterday. And I remember you told me, Gary, like if you were to dedicate like 10 years of your life to something, like let's say you want to become like a bodybuilder and every single day for the next 10 years, you work out, you go to the gym, you eat healthy. Like when at the starting line, it's like, fuck, 10 years away, I'm never going to finish this. But in reality, I mean, time flies, dude. And after the 10 years, you're going to look back and say like, holy shit, look at how much better I am now. Look at how fast that went by. Let's keep going another 10 years, you know? And you have that desire to keep learning, keep building, keep growing.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's weird because, you know, when you're 17, 18 and you think about going to college, you're like, man, 4 years. I have to do 4 years of college or 5 years of college. Yeah. And if I want to be a doctor or something, that's like 8 years, you know, if I want to get a PhD, it's 4 years plus another five or something, you know, it's that order of magnitude. And then, you know, 4 years go by and maybe you did not go to college, but 4 years go by. And then you look back, you're like, oh, if I had just decided to go to college, I would be done right now, you know? And you have the decision right now, should I go or should I not go? And guess what? Another 4 years go by. And then you look back, you're like, oh man, that one day, if I had just decided to go, I'd be done right now. I'd have my degree. And it's just the same thing with this stuff, Ben.
Yeah. No, that Gary, that I remember just having like deja vu. I think that was like the exact scenario you told me, you know,
of college. No, but you were already graduated.
I know. But you were just giving me an example of like becoming a doctor or something. Now, I remember Gary, when I graduated high school, one of my soccer teammates, he's like, hey, I'm going to join the army. And I'm like, what the fuck, dude? 4 years of your life. Like, what are you doing? Shocking decisions. And now it's almost 15 years later, and this fool's almost ready to retire, dude, from the military. Like, fucking legend.
That's crazy, dude. I thought about the military example also, because when I worked briefly at JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, you know, there's like secret clearance situations and all this sort of stuff. And I even told, you know, a coworker, a colleague of mine, like, you know what, maybe I'll just go into the military. I think I was 26 years old or something like that at the time. Maybe I'll just go in the military. And he's like, well, you're going to waste your life. Like, why are you doing it? Why would you do something like that? And like, I don't know, maybe in like 15 years, I'll be a colonel or something like this. And look, 15 years have gone by, Benny. And I look back, if I had gone in the military, maybe I'd be a colonel, right? Freaking Colonel Kleiman.
You'd be at Trump's meetings right now, dude.
Oh, dude. Hey, yeah, just, so I don't know, any parting advice for this guy? He sounds really young, because if he had been playing against Brian and he was talking about his trajectory, he's probably in his early 20s maybe, or mid or late. He's probably like you, Ben.
I think so, dude. I mean, just like I told the other guy, the fact that he's reaching out to you, reaching out to other people, networking, looking into, you know, different methodologies, the fact that he's hungry, I think he's on the right track. And like we said, man, you got to keep plugging away. And again, I want to reemphasize that it's a lifelong journey. The grind never stops. Even if you complete your A licensed coach, US soccer, like, okay, keep going, keep learning. Not that I'm advocating to go get your A license, but in some ways, if you want to coach at a high level, you do need that. Without it, you know, you won't be able to coach at the highest level that you want to. But in terms of just educating yourself, I mean, kind of the same advice that you give to the players, Gary. It's like, fall in love with the game, you know, from the famous YouTube video, What's Wrong with the Problem with Soccer in America? You say, eat, shit, breathe soccer 24/7. You know, that's what it takes if you want to be the best, if you want to make it to the highest levels. Incredible video.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, Benny. I know we're at the 1 hour mark, but you triggered me when you said a word, and it's in this email. And the triggering word is networking. I fucking hate it. I hate it. I know the concept of networking is important because you can't do anything alone or everything alone. But I hate how it's predominantly used. It's predominantly used to bypass earning shit, you know, and by being good at shit. It's used abundantly by people who don't merit jack, who suck at what they do. And so what the strategy they deploy is trying to schmooze and get in with the guys with some influence and some power and stuff, and, you know, lick their boots and hope that somebody will pick them, you know, and elevate them to a certain position. That is principally kind of like what networking, the vibes that come to me when I hear that, and when I hear that advice given to folks. Oh, you want to go network? You want to go to the US Soccer Coaching Conference, you know, or that freaking annual coaching conference that they have, where thousands of coaches come and there's panels and there's the booths being, products being sold and stuff. Barf me a fucking river. Barf me a river. I've gone to two of those things. I think I was kind of semi-obligated to go for certain reasons. Fucking throw up emoji, dude. Green barf all over the ground with the networking shit. Just get good at your craft and love the craft itself. And then the network will, it's not magic. The network starts coming to you all of a sudden. You see people coming to you, wanting to learn from you, wanting to connect with you, wanting to hire you, et cetera, et cetera. But you have to be good. You have to be undeniable.
Right. I think there is value though, Gary, in networking with like-minded people. For example, like what comes to mind to me is like when you guys had the 343 Summit and you have all these coaches coming together that are wanting to implement the same things, have the same ideas, and kind of just building off each other and picking each other's brains. So I think in that sense, that's when networking can be a good thing, you know? And in some cases, I mean, in some, even the people that do build, I mean, Gary, look at like, we always bring him up, but Elon Musk, like this one has built his own enterprise, but to where he's gotten right now to be like fucking that close to Trump, I don't think he gets there without networking. And not to say that he was like just using other people to build for him, but like, I don't think he's where he's at right now if he hadn't networked with the right people and talk, you know what I mean?
I 100% agree. And it is essential. Absolutely. I just wanted to offer that other angle to it all.
Right. People that network so they don't have to do the work.
Correct. Yes. Correct.
No, that makes sense. Just so the audience knows how much we love them and care about them, right? Wednesday, April 16th, it's 12:16. We're missing fucking Champions League.
Real Madrid and La Remontada.
To witness Madrid get knocked out of the Champions League, fucking legendary. I can't wait to see it today, dude, from Arsenal.
Yeah, man.
We'll see, though. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't, again, to close, I don't want people to get the wrong idea of my rant on networking, because obviously I network too. You know, I talk to people, they talk to me, and they send me emails and I respond to their emails. I don't blow anybody off, you know, so obviously it's important. I just got triggered, bro, because, you know, I know the angle that most of these US soccer guys take, and it's the other one. You didn't earn shit, and then you tell people, you advise people to network because you want the folks to lick your boots, basically. Be friends with us, you know, and maybe you'll get picked.
Yeah. Have you seen that guy, Greg? I can't recall his name, but he's not a politician, but he talks politics, and he goes to like college campuses and he like encourages students to like debate against him. And this will always just rose. What's that guy's name? You know?
Kirk something.
Yeah, Kirk something. I want to see like, or even like Ben Shapiro have like these like debates with like fucking liberals. I want to see you versus a US soccer guy just fucking sit down.
It won't last long. I'll be like, show me your product. Yeah, you can't show me a product because they're bureaucrats. They are literally just pencil pushers and doing the bidding of their masters. That's what they do. So they're like politicians. That's it. Case closed. It's done. Over. It's like a career politician who's been a politician their entire life, has never held down a real job, has never built a business, has never produced shit, right? They're just professional talkers, professional bullshitters.
Yeah.
All right. You got, Real Madrid?
You got triggered again, dude.
You leave it to the end of the episode, man, to spice me up, work me up.
That's hilarious, dude. Yeah, brother. Real Madrid, dude. Let's see what happens. Hopefully they get knocked out.
Last comment for real. For these three folks who sent an email in and we did this little Q&A for, and just to put a bow on it, like you usually do, I ask you one favor. Advocate for promotion and relegation. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football, while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there. but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.